Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months. I'm working on a divorce. Is it okay to date? I believe it is. But she's not comfortable with being around people who know my divorce is not final. Can you help? He kind of answered it when he said, if she's not comfortable, it's not a good gig. And Pat, you have some questions about dating?
I am 58 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I've been divorced for years. I was watching the Oprah show the other day, and they were talking about...
They were talking about sexual desire.
How does that factor in if you're after menopause?
Obviously, being postmenopausal, you know, you aren't going to have the same pheromones, but then the men you're probably going to be dating, they're not going to have that need to mate with you, for children. How do you feel about hooking up with somebody else?
To bring Carol to your stage.
Listen to Carol the Coach. Hey, I am Carol Jurenson Sheets, and this is the show where we talk about sexual addiction. And tonight, we're going to actually talk about love addiction. Why? Well, I've got somebody that I'm interviewing next week who has a love addiction and sees himself acting out with sexual addiction. And so we're going to talk about what are the differences. What do you do if you think you have both? Can you just have one? And how do you know which one it is? So this is going to be an interactive show tonight. Literally, I'm going to want you to call in. And that number is 646-595-3284. Now, I know that many of you listen to it after the fact. You know, you download it from iTunes or you download it from the Blog Talk website itself, and that is absolutely okay. But if you are somebody who wants to get more information, wants to talk about things, then this is a show for you. It's totally anonymous. I never ask your name, and I really want you to feel comfortable. Comfortable enough to ask me the questions that you might have to ask. You know, it's hard to know who you can talk to about these kinds of issues, and I'm a certified sexual addictions therapist. And so I'm going to encourage you to feel free to call 646-595-3284 if you have any questions. In the meantime, I have have to tell you, I have had a very generous offer from Gentle Path. Now, some of you may know that Gentle Path Press is the publishing company associated with ITAP. And ITAP is the amazing organization that certifies sexual addiction therapists. And they publish books that have to do specifically with recovery, and more specifically, sexual addiction. And so Gentle Path Press has offered to let me have you go to Facebook and put in Gentle Path Press and please like it for three reasons. One, Gentle Path Press helps sex addicts find help. I mean, you really can't, I'm telling you, they're the best publishing company that there is. And more sex addicts are finding help in an unusual place. It's in a box. Now, Dr. Patrick Carnes, Ph.D., who has long been considered the world's preeminent source of information and research in the field of sex addiction, he's developed a tool called the Recovery Star Kit to walk sex addicts down the path to recovery. And with this kind of tool, sex addicts have shown an ability to transform a life of self-destruction into a life of self-care. You know, a life in chaos and despair into one of confidence and peace. And so one of the things that I do is that I use it with my recovering folks. And it's used in hospitals and treatment centers all over the world. And so that's just one of the recovery kits that Gentle Path publishes. They are an amazing group of people, and I got to tell you, if you get on their Facebook and like them and then send me an email that says, hey, I got on their Facebook, I liked Gentle Path Press, and if you are the 5th and the 12th person to send me an email to carolthecoach@aol.com, I will send you probably the most important book in sexual addiction recovery. So I'm going to ask you to please get on their website and like them. And again, that is Gentle Path Press. And they're just an amazing organization. And I will send you something. But you have to email me, and then I have to count how many emails I have. And then again, if you're the winner, I will send you one of their recovery tools for partners or for addicts. Okay, so go ahead and do that. I really highly recommend it. And I want to talk to you tonight a little bit about what is love addiction. You know, I'm going to be doing a workshop here in a couple of weeks talking about love addiction because it is so difficult to know what it is and how to cope with it. And so I thought, where better to practice what I'm going to be talking about as well as to educate you on what is love addiction. And like I said, I'm going to be interviewing a man who actually has love addiction. So this is going to be a good show. Stay tuned. And if you think you know anybody who may also have this disorder, you might instruct them to go to the show tonight. You know, that's the beautiful thing about internet radio is even if they're not listening, you can say, hey, go to Blog Talk Radio or iTunes and download the July 1st show on love addiction. Now, you know, love addiction is an obsessive compulsive process used to relieve or medicate an intolerable relationship reality. And many of the experts believe that there are three types of love addiction. And they are, one, the romance type of love addiction. And that is the person that gets the greatest charge, the greatest hit from the actual infatuation stage or relationship. And they very clearly get the dopamine and the PEA, chemical hit. And that's what charges them, and that's what continues to drive them to look for love in all the wrong places. Now, if you think that you're a love addict, then what you need to know is that it's not necessarily just the infatuation stage. Maybe that is what you're so drawn to and that you're chronically looking for. And as I said, you kind of have that obsessive-compulsive process, and it medicates your everyday relationship reality. So that's the first type. The second type is the relationship portion of love addiction. You know, those are the people that, you know what, they are in the relationship to feel that love on an ongoing basis. That's what they're drawn to. It's the relationship part of the addiction. Now, how do you know if you've got an addiction versus you just want to be in relationship with somebody? Well, we're going to go into that, but believe me, there are specific criteria. And the specific criteria is what gives you an idea of, wow, what is this that makes it so engaging, so medicating, and so obsessive. And then that third type of love addiction is where somebody uses sex. They use sex as a tool to conquer the person, to attract them, to motivate, and to keep them. And so you have the infatuation stage, the romance, you have the relationship stage, and that obviously is the day-to-day life with somebody, and then you have somebody who uses sex as a tool to gain love addiction. And love addiction typically stems from two primary issues. The first is low self-esteem. If you're somebody that you don't feel good about yourself and you use other people to validate you, and that's the only way that you can feel self-worth, then you're going to constantly be driven to wanting to be with somebody to validate who you are. And boy, is that dangerous territory, because when you do that, when you externally look for reasons to validate, then what ends up happening is if the relationship does not work, well, you guessed it, then you're constantly disappointed. And if you're that kind of person, you may even hook up with love-avoidant people. And, you know, that is a very common dynamic in love addiction, is that you very clearly want to reenact probably that lack of nurturance you had as a kid. And so don't ask us why, but what we know about people that have love addiction is that they are automatically magnetized to somebody who is actually love avoidant. So what happens? The two do that dance of, come here, no, go away, come here, go away. And it becomes pretty pathological. Now, Erin Allen, a marriage and family therapist and CSAT, a certified sexual addictions therapist, was able to adapt a love addiction screening test. And the kinds of questions that he ended up asking were indicative of a problem with love addiction. And I just want to go over a few of those questions. Have you ever tried to control how often you would see someone romantically? Do you ever get high from romance, fantasy, or intrigue? Do you feel desperation or uneasiness when away from your lover or sexual partner? Do you believe that a romantic relationship will make your life bearable? Are you unable to stop seeing a specific person even though you know that that person is destructive to you? Do you have difficulty being alone? Do you feel that life would have little or no meaning without a love relationship? Do you replace ended relationships immediately? In other words, you can't stand to be alone. And as soon as one of them's over, you're looking for, as I teasingly say, your next victim. Do you find that you have a pattern of repeating bad relationships? And does attention to your romantic relationships help you to cope with or escape from life's problems? Okay, now of those 10 questions, how many would you have answered yes to? And do you see how some of those questions are absolutely geared towards people that get that dopamine high from being with somebody, seeking them out, being infatuated, having that fantasy of the ideal person versus the other kind of person who needs somebody to validate them and, you know, has some sort of need to control their lover or partner romantically? You know, they would be tending to replace ended relationships immediately. They wouldn't want to be alone. And they would feel desperation or uneasiness when away from their lover or sexual partner. These are some of the criteria that defines what a love addict is. As well as, for many people that have love addiction, they have had something we call big and little T traumas. Now, big T traumas are if you've lost somebody prematurely in your lifetime. Maybe your mother died at birth, or maybe your father was shot, or perhaps your parents got a divorce and it was terribly, terribly ugly, and there was threats, a lot of anger. Those are big T traumas. They can severely wound you and traumatize you. And then the little T traumas are insidious. They might be, and this so often happens with love addiction, they might be a parent who didn't give you the attention or affection that you desired. I've had several love addicts call it affection and attention deficit disorder. They didn't get what they needed as a child, and they continue to reenact that trauma by looking for people to make them feel whole. That is a little T trauma. If you're somebody who needs a relationship to fulfill you and to fill the void, or you self-medicate with relationships so that you don't have to feel alone and isolated and sad, you're more than likely a love addict. And if you think of that song, you know, looking for love in all the wrong places, that typically means that you looked for love from people who could not give it to you. And as a result, you constantly felt the rejection over and over and over again. And you tried harder and harder and harder to sustain love. You know, people with love addiction typically lack kind of an internal guidance system to navigate them through healthy and unhealthy relationships. And that is so important to know, because it is that internal guidance system that clearly makes a difference in creating healthy choices in our lives. You know, one of the things I remember my girlfriend said to me, she had some difficulty with her life. She had a pretty unavailable mother because her twin sister had died as a child. And not only was mother attending to her sister for much of her childhood, but she got so depressed when she lost her child that she went into a big depression. And as a result, my girlfriend kind of raised herself. Actually, she became the mother of the family. And so she never had her needs met as a child. And this woman has been in love with the fantasy of love her entire life. You know, she'll meet somebody and immediately she'll start talking about how they can take vacations together and how they may move in together and how they're going to get married. And I'm thinking, dear God, you've only texted him 7 times. Or, oh my gosh, you've had 1 date and you're already thinking of this person as a marital partner. Well, I remember that Tammy said to me, you know, Carol, I don't know how you deal with rejection so well. I mean, in my own personal life, when my soulmate decided that he no longer wanted to be together, we had really clear boundaries. You know, I was forlorn and distraught and sad. You know, I mean, I was sobbing. I was crying a lot. I emoted, but in the back of my brain, I knew 2 very important things. I knew that if he didn't want to be with me, I didn't want to be with him. And that's because I knew that I didn't want to be with someone who didn't want to be with me. Okay, so I had that rational thinking even though I was heartsick and heartbroken. The second thing I knew is that I did not need further contact with this person. You know, to have called him and inquired about how he was doing, to have followed him or stalked him or tried to continue a relationship with him would have continually hurt me. What I needed to do was feel my feelings, distract myself from the pain, and move on with my life. So my friend Tammy said to me, my goodness, I wish I could have done what you did. You're so good at boundaries. And the bottom line is, I didn't have the same type of trauma in childhood. And my friend is a love addict. And I have never been plagued with that particular problem. You know, my guidance system says, get on with your life. Look for somebody healthy. You deserve more. Her guidance system said, if you just try a little bit harder, if you just talk a little bit sweeter, if you just work on getting him back, you will find happiness and love. You know, I suspect that our brains processed relationships differently. She got a neurochemical reaction from being with that person, whereas I got the same neurochemical reaction, but it was in much smaller doses and something much more manageable for me. And it wasn't intense, and the high wasn't as high. You know what it's like when you're in love with somebody and the dopamine's flowing. And the serotonin is at exactly the right amount. Well, if you're listening to the show, you might not, because your neurochemistry may be off. What we know about sex addiction and love addiction is that it really is a brain disorder. And so although big and little T traumas can really affect that internal navigation system and desire for love, what else we know is that every person is made differently, and there's probably something in a body that also is ripe for an addiction, be it love, sex, drugs, alcohol, gambling, spending, you name it. Now, when love addiction is concerned, impulse control is gravely affected. You know, it's difficult to tell yourself no. And as a matter of fact, you typically don't know boundaries. So many of my clients who have felt love addiction, when there's a breakup or there's distance or there's avoidance, they make a phone call. They send a text. They send an email. And when that person doesn't respond, they send another and another and another. And the reason is they keep saying to themselves, well, they must not have gotten my contact information or they would have called me. So I'm going to make sure, I'm going to calm my anxieties and make sure that I know that they did get that information. And that's the driving force, the motivator to unclear boundaries or violations of boundaries, gravely affected impulse control problems. You know, most addictions are considered an impulse control disorder anyway. So oftentimes I get newbies, therapists that go, now, he has a sex addiction, she has a love addiction. What in the heck do I diagnose them? Because they are not in our statistical manual. And for most, I can say, well, I guarantee you they have an impulse control disorder, or they wouldn't have the addiction to begin with. So that is truly a disorder that can be given to anybody who violates their own sense of boundaries and creates more chaos in their life. Now, love addiction typically leaves the person feeling powerless. And the relationship actually becomes the higher power. Now, if you can imagine that, you know, as an addict, that there are these things called 12-step groups, and that's where you admit that your life is unmanageable and something other than yourself, higher power, is going to restore you to sanity. Well, for love addicts, the higher power is the other person. And what I know to be true is we should never make anybody our higher power. Not our wives, not our husbands, not our parents, not our kids. Your higher power is that divine energy that helps to guide you through and through. And so if you're somebody that thinks that you may have a love addiction, just ask yourself, you know, do I 24/7 think about the other person? Do I have obsessive thinking, racing thoughts? Do I have a compulsion? Am I unable to handle thinking about other things? I mean, it really requires a lot of focus, and it's very time limited. Well, you more than likely have a love addiction, if that's what's going on for you. You're listening to Carol the Coach. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets. We're talking about love addiction right now. We're going to take a break. I will be happy to answer your questions at 646-595-3284. We'll be right back.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Oh, yes. You get what you need. And that is what this show is all about. It is to help you with love addiction and sex addiction and anything else that feels obsessive compulsive. This is the show. And I highly recommend that you email me with questions at carolthecoach@aol.com. You can go to my website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach. You can listen to the show every Monday night from 9 to 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And I got news for you. I mean, you can call me right now, and that number is 646-595-3284. As we continue to talk about what is love addiction, because it truly can feel debilitating, and it takes strategies that will actually make you healthier. You know, it's not reality-based. And I told you before, if you think you have a propensity for love addiction, then you probably have hooked up with someone who is a love avoider, and that keeps you in that dance. And so it's really important to get out of the relationship. Now, if you're married to that person, well, then we got to talk about how to cope with it. But you don't have to duplicate old childhood wounds, and you have the right to get it right the second time around. So I want to highly encourage you that if you have this disorder, you probably have a genetic predisposition for it. You may have had trauma in your childhood, and probably the brain is short-circuiting. Either it craves dopamine, oxytocin, or serotonin. And so if the brain is requiring that stuff, and as a result, you produce those chemicals because of a relationship or because of the rush or because of the sexual activity that accompanies love addiction, then we have to help you to reproduce it in other ways. And we're going to be talking about what is that. Now, oftentimes, when you hook up with a love avoider, you know, what happens is that you feel a real fear of abandonment. Because the core issues remind you of how you grew up as a child. Actually, love addiction is fed. It's driven by the fear of scarcity, that there isn't enough. There's not enough love to go around. There's not enough attention to go around. There's not enough affection to go around. And if that's the case, you have to do something we call symptom substitution. You actually have to find healthy ways of getting those needs met. Now, I know that there can be a fear that one will never get their emotional needs met. So that's the driver that creates a love addiction. And I can't say enough about how tough it is to hook up with somebody who's love avoidant, because then you never feel like your needs get met. And, you know, there are some actual stages or cycles of this addiction. You know, when you begin to enter the stages of love addiction, you'll feel very preoccupied. There'll be continuous fantasies about the relationship, and they're not necessarily reality-based. They're more about what you want in a relationship, not what you're getting. And then there's this ritualization process. And a ritualization process is the process that occurs while you are pursuing somebody. You know, maybe just putting on your makeup and doing your hair and spraying it is part of the intrigue of feeling feminine and powerful and seductive. Maybe, you know, when you're really, really highly charged by a relationship and you want to feed into the relationship, maybe your ritual is that you cook for that person, or you keep the house absolutely in tip-top shape. So you have to decide, what is the ritual in your life? Maybe you drink prior to asking to get your needs met with this person. You know, maybe you have to lower your inhibitions before you can begin the chase. So think about what ritualization occurs in your life. What do you do before you get your fix? Then another part of the cycle is compulsivity. And, of course, that's that continuous engagement in the behavior despite negative consequences or the desire to stop. I can't remember her name. I know it's Amp or something, but she's a supermodel. And she was chasing after this man. She was calling him. She was sending him emails. She was sending him gifts. She was outside of his house. And one day he just stopped and he said, "Quit stalking me. Stop your damn stalking." And she just jolted out of the altered state, the trance. And she said, "Stalking? What are you talking about?" And he says, "Get out of my face. Stay out of my business. Quit stalking me." And she had not seen her own behavior as stalking. Now, here is one of the most beautiful women in the world who was so desperate and wanted this man so badly that her own sense of reality got very distorted. And that compulsivity can create lots of negative behaviors that unfortunately create negative consequences. You know, so many of the addicts that I work with will go after a married man or a married woman. And it's like they forget that this person has somebody else in their life. They believe that they're really all theirs. They get into some real stinking thinking or distortion. So certainly love addiction does not in any way, shape, or form discriminate based on race, color, creed, or relationships, prior relationships. The last part of that cycle is fusing. Now, sometimes when you have a love addiction, as with any other addiction, you also have other behavioral problems that fuse with the behavior, like chemical dependency, sexual addiction, eating disorders, gaming, gambling. So it's almost as if people have to snort cocaine before they go out and search for their next love addiction high. Or, you know, when things get really bad and you can't get your needs met with a partner and you're dealing with that love avoidant, you decide that you may not be able to control that relationship, but you can control what you put in your mouth. So fusing can very typically occur in this situation. So what do you do? What kind of treatment can help somebody with a love addiction? Well, this is going to come as no shock to you if you've listened to the show. There are love addiction groups, love addiction anonymous groups all over the country. They're not as prevalent as AA or NA, Narcotics Anonymous, or even SA or SAA, but they are available, and they have telephone meetings if you don't live in an area that has a love addiction group or a sex and love addictions group. But truly, if you've got a love addiction, you need to find a therapist who has expertise in addiction, preferably love addiction, and get yourself to 12-step groups. Find yourself a sponsor who can help support you through this, and obviously a good therapist. And then more than likely, that therapist will help you do some trauma work so that you can learn what traumas you experienced, have them validated, have them acknowledged, hopefully have them externalized so that you can release them and move on with your life, and create a healthy, interdependent relationship with people. You probably are going to need to do self-esteem work. You're going to need stress management skills. You know, when these cravings and urges come to you, you've got to know how to calm the beast. You know, that may look like progressive relaxation or visualization with deep breathing. So, you know, for me, whenever I feel anxious, I exercise. It works it right out of me. So there's all sorts of stress management techniques you can use. So again, just to reiterate, you may need to do trauma work, self-esteem work, or stress management. Think about that for a second. What might be the most helpful for you? Now, I know that I am, I'm biased. Not only am I a psychotherapist of 33 years, but I am also a life coach. And so I really believe in life skills. And so you may need to learn assertiveness and healthy boundaries. You may need to let people know what you need, how you feel, and what you believe. That's assertiveness. And you may need to, with your sponsor or your therapist, talk about what are healthy boundaries. You know, is it healthy? And this is what you got to ask yourself. To sit outside somebody's house and watch and see if somebody else shows up. I can tell you right now, it's not healthy. Is it healthy to call somebody 6 times? Is it healthy to feel so forlorn and desperate that you're actually sick to your stomach and you can't eat and you can't sleep because you need his or her attention? So you might need to learn assertiveness. You might need to learn boundary setting. You might need to learn how to handle conflict. Conflict is normal, natural, and necessary. But what you may need to do is realize that in most situations, you can't take conflict personally. So those are some techniques that can help you to feel more confident, to improve your self-esteem. And then lastly, I always say you may need self-parenting. You know, you may need to treat yourself like your own best friend. And self-parenting means using affirmations and giving yourself permission to be imperfect. You may really need a therapy group, too, that kind of helps assist you in making some choices that are difficult, but where people can remind you, hey, this too shall pass. You're not always going to feel this way. The craving's going to go away. You know, he's not good for you. She's a maniac. She's a stalker. She's going to burn a bunny in an oven. She's a nut. Depending on whether you're male or female. And so I highly recommend that if you believe that you have a love addiction, then you get with somebody who's certified, that has an addiction background, and start looking at your traumas. Start working on your self-esteem. Start meditating. And really work on your ability to make decisions. And you know, if you've, again, listened to this show, you know one of my favorite formulas is breaking down a situation by using your head, your heart, and your gut. Of course, the head's the intellect, the heart's your emotions, and the gut is your intuition. And there is no doubt that when you ask yourself, well, what do I think? How do I feel? And what do I know? That you're going to come up with a better choice as opposed to just following that knee-jerk reaction and letting your impulses run wild. And then if you work on conflict and you learn how to depersonalize it so that you do not take it personally, oh my goodness. It makes all the difference in the world. It doesn't feel so traumatizing if you don't get what you need from somebody. That is so very important. Now, it is really important to have a voice and to feel grounded in your decisions. And I can't emphasize enough that if you're having some questions about, you know, do you have a love addiction, then you probably need to get to take that love addiction screening test by Erin Allen. It's on the internet. You can just Google love addiction screen test. Or Erin Allen is A-A-R-O-N-A-L-A-N. I'm actually trying to get him on the show. And, of course, Sex and Love Addictions Anonymous, they have 40 questions that can help you diagnose whether you may have a problem. And then there are many books on love addiction, but the ones I really recommend are Pia Mellody's Facing Love Addiction, Giving Yourself the Power to Change the Way You Love, Susan Peabody's Addiction to Love, and Brenda Schaefer's Is It Love or Is It an Addiction? Get yourself to some love addictions and, you know, groups, Love Addicts Anonymous groups, LAA, or Sex and Love Addictions Anonymous groups, SLAA. And if you're not making headway with your therapist, and you maybe you've been to a couple of them, and it just feels like you're spinning your wheels or that you need more intensive treatment, there is nothing wrong with that. But what you need to do is you will more than likely need to consider doing an intensive workshop or some intensive treatment at a treatment center that specializes in love addiction. Now, I highly recommend the Meadows out in Wicker Burg, Arizona, because Pia Melody is there. She's one of the faculty there. And, of course, she wrote Facing Love Addiction. And the Centers for Relationship and Sexual Recovery at the Ranch has a very good love addiction program. So there is help for you. And, you know, I can't emphasize enough that although some of these programs are pricey, most of them will work with you to make it affordable so that you can get the help that you need. And, you know, if you are experiencing problems and you find yourself in relationships and you're unable to leave, even if they're unhealthy for you, or you're hiding your relationship with other people, or you're having sex with someone just so that they'll like you better, or you've made yourself promises, okay, this is it. I am not going to go after anybody. I'm not going to search the internet. I'm not going to get on Craigslist. I'm not going to go to Plenty of Fish. I'm not going to go to Match.com. And then within minutes, hours, or days, you're back on, even though you've not had a lot of good success, and you know deep down inside that you're supposed to work on yourself, then more than likely this compulsion is out of control and you need some additional help. Because I got to tell you, nobody can fix you or make you better. That has to come from within. And it can be very difficult to believe. But if you need another person to really make you feel alive and you feel lost without somebody in your life, that is exactly where you need to be. You need to be alone so you can figure out who you are and deal with the trauma and create healthy support and work through some of these issues. Okay, well, that's a lot of information I've just given you on love addiction. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share with you some of the criteria. So again, if you're falling in love repeatedly, you're obsessing over every person you're with, you're neglecting to care for yourself, you're getting lost in relationships, and you're unable to be alone, or you're in an unhealthy, destructive relationship and you have opportunities to get out but you're afraid to because you don't want to be alone. If you're one of those people that has to unintentionally flirt with everybody you meet and your romancing is all-consuming, the relationship is your God. You have met the criteria for love addiction, and you need to get the help you so deserve. Now, next week, we do have somebody, and he's going to be talking about his love addiction and how he knew that he had the addiction and what he did to get healthy. So I highly recommend you listen to that show, and, of course, that'll be July 8th. So we will talk to you next week and wrap up on love addiction. And as I say at the end of every show, you know, there will only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly have the courage to be yourself and know that with the help of a good therapist, of a support group, bibliotherapy, and this show, we can get you on the road to health and happiness, perhaps again or perhaps for the first time. Have a great week, and we will see you next week. You're listening to Carol the Coach. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and this is Strength, Hope, and Recovery on Blog Talk Radio. Good night.